You are listening to a sermon by Al McKay, recorded on Sunday, November 20th, 2022, at Point Grey Interminonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
Well, good morning. The challenge, of course, is to try to, for someone who doesn't speak tons all the time and that sort of thing, is to try to keep things short. And to keep things short, I shouldn't try to embody every phrase that I make somehow. So we're going to try and keep this within 15 minutes. I need to tell you that this working on this particular meditation, I have found both dry tears and wet tears at times, and maybe that'll come clear throughout some of the stuff. But it's so I have been very appreciative of the invitation to be here, and so thank you for that. Now, this whole story has this incredible thing happening in the middle of it. What's something you have waited for, and it took a long, long time? And of course, what I'm referring to in the story is that this particular person, this lame person, has been lame for 38 years. How many of you are older than 38? Oh, just a few. Okay. Well, you know something about how long 38 years might be. We live in a culture that expects things to happen quickly, and we get impatient about getting something new. Even unknown, but we get impatient. We need it now, blah, blah, blah. So to wait for 38 years would seem very, very long. Now, Sven and Laura, I don't know if you have off the top of your head how long we have known each other, because it's been longer than 38 years.
Almost 50.
Maya just said almost 50. But of course, she's still 13, so I don't know what she actually knows at that point. No, I'm just joshing. We have things that we wait for. And this is what happens in John's gospel, when it says, soon after the feast came around and Jesus was back in Jerusalem near the sheep gate in Jerusalem, there was a pool in Hebrew called Bethesda with five alcoves, with hundreds of sick people, blind, crippled, paralyzed, were all in these alcoves. One man had been an invalid for 38 years. Friends, he waited for 1,981 weeks before he got healed. Or another way he could put it is he waited for 13,370 days. And at the end of that was when he got healed. When Jesus saw him stretched out by the pool and knew how long he had been there, he said, "Do you want to get well?" The sick man said, "Sir, when the water is stirred, I don't have anybody to put me in the pool. By the time I get there, somebody else is already in." Jesus said, "Get up, take your bedroll, start walking." The man was healed on the spot. He picked up his bedroll and walked off. Everything's great. Everything's wonderful, right? Unfortunately, that day happened to be the Sabbath. The Jews stopped the healed man and said, "It's the Sabbath. You can't carry your bedroll around. It's against the rules." But he told them, "The man who made me well told me to do exactly that, to get up and walk. He said, take your bedroll and start walking." The crowd asked, "Who gave you the order to take it up and start walking?" But the healed man didn't know, for Jesus had slipped away into the crowd. I want you to think about this for a minute. Have you ever been in a crowd and have Jesus slip away? Have you ever been in a place where there's been lots of people, lots of chatter, lots of conversation going, and something gets dropped in the middle and It's just like Jesus slipping away sometimes. It's just something to ponder, because I believe that in these passages of scripture that we read so often, that phrases like that, we need to ask ourselves, have I experienced that? Have I thought about that before? And if you have, in what way has Jesus slipped away? Because we would like to think that he never slips away. But it seems to be in this story, he slipped away. He didn't want to answer the Pharisees' questions. So you're imagining that you're there. You look around.
This part.
A little later, Jesus found him in the temple and said to the man who had slipped away, or no, Jesus slipped away. He had gone away as well, the man who knew that it was Jesus. And Jesus said to the man, now get this line. Have you ever had Jesus say this line to you? You look wonderful. You're well. Don't return to a sinning life or something worse might happen. I love the phrase, you look wonderful. Wonder what would happen to us if every morning we woke up and heard Jesus's voice saying, you look wonderful this morning. I'll let you sit with that for a bit. And we may come back to it. So you've imagined that you're there, you've looked around, and you're in the midst of a community of the marginalized and unwell. It's a large community of individuals all wanting to be healed. So when Jesus asks the question, it seems silly, of course. The lame man wants to get well. Of course he wants to get well. They all want to get well. That's why they keep sort of trying to butt into the line. But the man seems resigned to this situation. He says back to Jesus, sir, when the water is stirred, I don't have anybody to put me in the pool. By the time I get there, somebody else is already in. He understands that he can't do this alone. He needs a community around him, others to help him. But this is his community. People who are broken. It's the broken community. It's the sick community, rejected, dejected. They are all competing for the same goal, getting into the pool at the right time. They are a bunch of individuals trying to do something on their own, but they can't. They need each other, but there's not a neighbor in sight. Jesus seems to ignore the man. But for this lame man today, there is a neighbor, and that neighbor happens to be Jesus. When the healed man starts walking, some of the Pharisees get upset that he is carrying his bedroll. Very beginning of my work with InterVarsity, I did a little work out the Fraser Valley, especially with Mennonites. And discovered that, for some people, rock and roll was not something to be sort of good at. And I was a drummer. I still am a little bit of a drummer. And I played in a couple of little groups. And I found music to be quite the release of my emotions and also just on some of the things that I was thinking about. And we have Pharisees. I wonder if there have been Pharisees in your life at any time. People who want to tell you that this is the right way over here, and you should do it this way. And of course, in our relationship with Jesus, we need to try to figure out and say to ourselves, okay, well, what does this mean for Jesus? What does this mean for me who wants to be a follower of Jesus? And somewhere I read over the last 4 or 5 months, neighbors get a lot of attention in the Christian story. There's lots about neighbors. And I think it's important that we sort of recognize that, because we're told that we are to love our neighbors. And the Pharisees are told, you got to follow the rules. And have you ever lived in that tension? Have you ever thought about that tension? In what ways do we sort of lean into when someone says, here's the rules, and we say, good, I've got the rules. This is all I need to do. I just need to be like this person here. But when we come to Jesus, Jesus sort of says, it's actually maybe not about the rules. It's more about how we talk. It's about the way we interact with each other. So after interacting with the Pharisees, the healed man sees Jesus, who greets him like this. And I love this line, that's why I'm repeating it. You look wonderful. You're well. Don't return to a sinning life, or something worse might happen. And remember, the Pharisees are more concerned with broken rules than with healing of broken people. That might be a little catchy phrase in some ways, but just let it sit with you for a bit. And how do I live into that experience today? So now the man belongs to a new community. He is no longer part of the community of the unwell or the broken. But this group of religious people want to slam him for breaking these rules. What if we focused on what was good in our neighbors, not what needed fixing? See, I'm not sure that God really wants us to be the person who's always fixing. What if we recognize we're all in the process of becoming well, becoming whole, becoming who we are called to be? Friends, listen carefully. This is the slow work of God, and it involves waiting, but also taking some action. Pierre Teilhard de Chardin uses this idea of the slow work of God. When I read this phrase, I tried to think about what that might look like. Karen Barad is a feminist theorist, you better say it.
Go on.
Who is trained as a theoretical physicist. I'm horrible when it comes to reading big words. And it says right after it, I got to say it 5 times quickly, but I'm not going to. Anyways, Sarah Barad makes a distinction between interaction and intraaction. In the dictionary, inter is defined as between or among, something shared, which means it's somewhat external. However, intra means within, on the inside, maybe even hidden. Barad says interaction suggests things exist, fully formed, and that these fully formed things act upon each other. But intraaction honors the idea that we are in a constant state of becoming. Now think about this. We are in a constant state of becoming who God wants us to be, who Jesus wants us to be, which is more of an inner transforming. And so there is a continued process of emergence. Nothing is certain and fixed. Get that? Nothing is certain and fixed, but it is always becoming itself through intraaction and with everything else. So that means one person who is in the process of becoming who God made them to be is connecting with and relating to someone else who is also not yet fully formed, but in process. So that means when you and I communicate, when we have the opportunity at the next time maybe to have a cup of tea together, a cup of coffee, to become part of the process in this is that we are becoming who we are meant to be. We can avoid judging each other and ourselves, and we can we are against some unfair finish standard, somewhat like the Pharisees saying, this is the Sabbath, you can't do that. We try to see who God is helping us become. This makes being neighbors very messy and complex, yet it is the Creator God who calls us into this more whole space. As I wrap this up, I want to tell you why I have been dwelling in John 5 and considering the importance of community in my life and who I have been becoming. I'm in the process of leaving 47 years of work in ministry. It was my individual calling and job. It started with InterVarsity. It went with Pioneer Pacific and Pioneer Chehalis. It then became part of the Downtown East Side, and then became something called Corporate Chaplains. which I've been a part of. And but I couldn't have done all those things without a wider community, or without God surprising me and teaching me along the messy way with all the mystery and complexity. And it is messy at times, and it is a mystery and complex. Actually, Sven and Laura were there when I began my connection with InterVarsity about 50 years ago. And as I've been processing my years of work, I experience joy and grief, laughter and tears. I've been struck by the amount of grief that I have experienced in these years of remembering and considering all the people and activities that have been part of my working community. Part of the Downtown East Side work was doing memorials, and I did a number of memorials. And Padre Gotama has a little poem which he uses, and he just, who's a writer, Irish writer, and he just talks about the fact that when he counts lives, he counts one life, one life, one life, one life. He doesn't count and say, Al did over 200 memorials in the Downtown East Side. I try to say one life, one life, one life, one life, because each life was important and valuable. So over this time of preparing, and also in the I have two last comments. The first one is just simply to say that if you have not, if one of the places where the tears flowed really quite strongly for me was when I just listened to the artist called Sting sing a song called The Rising, which is a beautiful song that actually Bruce Springsteen wrote. But it's a beautiful song and could be talked about and thought about as the rising of Christ. But I listen to this song and it brings me to tears, just sitting and enjoying it. I'm grateful that Jesus says, you look wonderful, even as I'm not finished in my becoming. Friends, there are a couple of questions which we put up. And if you want to chat amongst yourself, that may just mean you're having a wonderful individual conversation with yourself, or there may be others. And you may want to ponder or discuss some of these questions over lunch in the next while. Questions, I think, we're going to be put up.
If not, here they are.
Okay. If not, this is what they sound like. Where and in what ways are you experiencing discouragement, disappointment, and a heaviness of heart? Where is a source of encouragement for you in these times and places? How are you experiencing the slow work of God and the mystery of God in community? Friends, I want to thank you so much for the opportunity just to be here and to have this conversation. And at different times, hopefully later, we'll be able to have a cup of tea together. So blessings on you. Thank you.